We came to wreck
Australia.
Wouldn't live anywhere else.
Nobody leaves Paris.
I wish to drink some beer.
Why'd you come and drink on me?
I'm gonna have to kill you.
What are you talking about, death for?
Gutless wonders of the world unite.
Shoot straight, you bastards!
Hello, you're listening to Jump Cut on 3CR. My name's Nick. On the show today, Elise talks to Veronica Pardo of Arts Access about accessible cinema. But first, she'll talk to Luigi Acquisto of Fairtrade Films about Aguette de Beatrice. After this message.
Hi, we're from Braver College, and you're listening to 3CR Community Radio
on 8:55 AM.
Last week, I spoke with Michael Smith from Cinema Lorisai. Cinema Lorisai is a program of open-air cinema screenings in East Timor, in Dili and districts. Last weekend, they showed the Australian film Balibo in Balibo to an incredible response, as you can imagine. This week, I'm speaking with Luigi Acquisto. Luigi's company, Fairtrade Films, in partnership with Dili Filmworks, is creating East Timor's first homegrown feature film. It's called Aguette de Beatrice. Luigi, thanks for joining us on 3CR today.
Very welcome.
What is the story of Aguette de Beatrice?
Aguette de Beatrice is a very old story originally. It's an event that happened in France in 1609, and the story is based on an account of a particular trial that happened at that time. And there have been a number of books and films made about this story. The one most people will know is probably The Return of Martin Guerre with Gerard Depardieu.
Right.
Somersby was another version, and there was an earlier novella by Janet Lewis called The Wife of Martin Guerre. It's a very simple story. It's a young husband leaves his wife to go off on an adventure, but doesn't return for many years. When he does return, the wife and the rest of the family all welcome him as the husband, as the real Martin Guerre in that instance. After a while, the wife starts to suspect that he's an imposter, and no one else believes her. So she has, you know, a campaign to prove that the man who has returned, in fact, is not her husband. So what we've done is we've taken that very simple love story and transposed it to East Timor during the period of the occupation of the resistance with against Indonesia. And, you know, located a number of those events, such as the disappearance of the husband, located that at a moment when, you know, the Indonesians had massacred a whole village, or mainly had massacred all the men and male children in that village. And so that's the catalyst for our character disappearing.
How did this project come about?
I've been going to Timor since 1999. I've made three broadcast documentaries there, worked on Balibo, met a lot of people, both in front of the camera and behind the camera, who have an immense talent. And, you know, after Balibo, we thought it would be great to actually produce or help co-produce a film in Timor. And so that was 3 years ago now. Irem Tolentino, a young Timorese writer, co-wrote the script. We've pulled together a team of co-producers, directors, and so on, and you know, managed to piece together a small budget. You know, it's a guerrilla-style film, very low-budget film, and we start production in November. SBS has pre-bought the film, which is great. The World Movie Channel will show it as well, and there's a DVD distributor in Australia, so the film will be seen, as well as clearly seen in Timor.
Now, your company is Fairtrade Films, and you've got a particularly interesting, I suppose, model for filmmaking. Can you tell us a little bit more about Fairtrade Films?
Well, my co-producer, Stella Zamataro, and I have been making films for many years through a company called Abracadabra Films. We've made many documentaries, a lot of them in East Timor and some in Thailand, dealing with the issue of sex trafficking. So often interested in the social justice types of issues. And we found that over the years, if we worked with a particular community in East Timor, for example, or a particular family, or with a young woman who's been trafficked, it's not as simple as saying we're filmmakers, we come in, we don't disturb that world, and then we leave it. I think there are inherent responsibilities, ethical, financial, and so on, that carry on long after the film is completed. So with fair trade films, I guess what we've tried to do is actually formalise some of those relationships in the mission of the company, the philosophy of the company, if you like. So with Timor, you know, we're working together with very new Timorese filmmakers and ensuring that it's an equitable relationship with Ning, the young woman who had been trafficked to Australia as a child, as a 13-year-old. We've made two films about her. One recently went to air on SBS called Trafficked: The Reckoning. And so there's a relationship and a contract, if you like, in place with her to ensure that, you know, if the film is sold, if DVDs are sold and so on, that there's an equitable relationship, as well as a recognition of a shared co-authorship in mm-hmm. a way of
so
the film.
You're talking about a profit-sharing model.
There's all of that, but yeah. Also, you know, in Timor, it's not an individual, it's a community. So we've been running and organising and subsidising quite heavily a lot of film and television courses over the last couple of years that a lot of other people have contributed to. We've had John Maynard, the producer of Balibo, come over and work with the students with Dilly Filmworks. We've had David Elphick, who did Rabbit Proof Fence and many other films. Julia Lee was there recently, as well as many cinematographers, sound recordists, editors, all of whom have come over and given up their time to work with what is, you know, a very talented group of young filmmakers.
So it's that's kind of capacity building that you're doing there with, I suppose, a long-term vision for more film production?
Yeah, I mean, that's the term that's, you know, used. And it's the one we always quote when we're trying to get money, usually fruitlessly. But, yeah, it is the idea of building a film industry or helping and, you know, start a film industry. There's really the films that Dilly Filmworks has made. They've made five short films now. A couple of them have been accepted into a major festival, which I can't name at the moment because I'm not sure if they've made their official announcement yet.
Right.
So it's the idea of giving birth to a yep. film industry, which we always say is as rare as the birth of a nation.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
quite exciting, really.
Yeah. So that's a fairly slow process, I imagine.
It is a slow process, but then the process of developing a film is slow. So really the development of Beatrice's War, Agueda de Beatriz, has been 3 years, and we're starting shooting.
That's not exceptionally long,
no,
is
no,
it?
That's not long at all,
yeah.
really.
It's quite quick.
Yeah, normally can be, you know, much longer, 5 years, 10 years. Some of our documentaries take longer than that to finance. So, you know, we've got a very strong script. Again, we've received a grant from an organisation that can't be named because it isn't public yet, which just happened. I mean, it's a clause that they all say, you know, congratulations, but if you dare to make it public before we announce it, then we'll
yeah.
take it away.
Because you did sort of put the word out to fundraise for this as well, didn't you?
Yeah, a lot of the money has really come from individuals who have sponsored the film. It's come from a fan club we set up for the film. It's come from fundraisers we've done. Obviously, SBS has put in some money, but it's not a commission. It's a pre-buy, so mm-hmm. it's nowhere near the scale of that a commission would be. And some has come from the East Timorese government, the Ministry of Culture, of Arts. The president has put in some money as well, Horta. So it's a very low-budget film, and a lot of it is subsidised by Fair Trade Films in the sense that there's no equipment hire. All of that's been invested in the film. The Australian crew who are coming over are doing it for a fraction of, you know, what they normally would, but they've all been to Timor before and know a lot of the people we're working with and are very committed to the idea of the film.
You're on 3CR. This is the Jump Cut program on 8:55 a.m. I'm speaking with Luigi Acquisto from Fair Trade Films. We're talking about Agueda de Beatriz. That's going to be Timor's first feature film in its newest incarnation.
That's right. It is a co-production,
yep.
but, you know, it's the first Timorese film that has had significant input from, as I said, a Timorese writer, director. All the cast are Timorese. It will be in Tetum. And, you know, it will travel around Timor. And Michael Smith, who I know you've spoken to, has actually introduced or reintroduced cinema to Timor since the Indonesian period. And some of those screenings lately that he's been doing in the districts have had a phenomenal turnout. There was a screening of Balibo in a town called Malliana, near Balibo, last week, and there were 2,000 people who turned up to that. And the short films that Dilly Filmworks has made have been supporting the features that he's been taking around the country. So, you know, it's important that the film will be seen in Australia, possibly at festivals and so on. But, you know, it's more significant that it will be the first time that Timorese have actually seen a film made by Timorese in their own language featuring Timorese people, because that hasn't happened before. So
Timorese stories, I imagine, as well.
Yeah, and a Timorese story, which an adaptation of a much older story, but told in a Timorese context. So, you know, it's bizarre. Sometimes you think, imagine as Australians, if we'd never seen an Australian film, heard our voices on the screen or seen Australians in those roles. So it's going to be, you know, quite a groundbreaking film, but an important one in the sense that there's a high level of illiteracy in Timor. So film is a great way to tell stories and to, particularly with some of the younger people, to remind them of their history. And, you know, it's a popular medium. It's a medium that people like.
What role does storytelling, or cinema in particular, what role do you think that it plays in a nation like East Timor at this point in time?
Well, I think one of the critical things in Timor is that it's not a unified place. There's no unity, and, I mean, it's quite fragmented. And that's always been the case. I mean, it unified against a common enemy, which was the Indonesian military. But historically, Timor's a tribal society. They fought tribal wars for centuries. And it started to splinter again, both because of those old rivalries that may exist, but also because of the political rivalries that existed and came into play in 06 when, you know, the country was on the verge of civil war. So I think film can show people that they have more in common, can show them a common history rather than and dispel the idea that they are a series of separate tribes, separate political entities at war with each other. And so it can be, you know, a great tool in terms of nation building when people realise that, because a lot of Timorese don't. They don't. They all think that perhaps our district, our village, fought against the Indonesians. But at the time, there was very little knowledge of what anyone else was doing. Even Falantil, the armed resistance, didn't always know what other units were doing in different districts, because communication was very difficult, funds were very difficult. So I think, you know, film can help really unify Timor. And at the same time, it can help confront some of the very contentious issues at the heart of Timor today, one of which is politicians since 1999 have been saying reconciliation and forgiveness are critical, whereas most ordinary people will say, we don't want revenge, but we want justice for what's happened. Every other country in the world, Cambodia, has some sort of process. Why do we just have to forget and put it aside? And, you know, this film, through the love story, you know, through the fact that Beatrice, the woman in the film, discovers that the man who returns is an imposter, and that his history is much darker than it was in the original stories. You know, he's someone who, you know, fought against the Timorese, if you like. I mean, he fought with the militia. So for her to accept him is not just a compromise of her own integrity, even though she is in love with him. It's also, you know, a compromise of everything she fought for 24 years. So the film confronts those central issues of reconciliation, justice, forgiveness that are still at the heart of, you know, much of the debate in Timor today.
Now, I know you're just about to fly back. You're leaving tomorrow, very early in the morning. So production is underway as we speak, or we're gearing up?
Pre-production starts next week, so right. We'll have about 6 weeks of pre, or about 4-5 weeks now, and then we start in early November.
All right, so when do you imagine that we may be able to see the film?
Probably not till the second half of next year, I think.
Second half of next year, yeah. All right. And if people want to follow the progress of the film, or perhaps contribute or get more information, where should they go?
We have a website, fairtradefilms.com.au, and that tells you about the work that Fairtrade Films does, but also about Beatrice's War. And there is a section on that where people can join the fan club, can sponsor the film if they like. And we've had, you know, very generous response from people both here and in Timor. And it's still very much needed. We're making this film, as I said, guerrilla style, which means we're going to shoot for about 4 weeks this year. We don't have enough funds to complete the film. We'll then continue shooting next March or April when we generate more finance. And then the third phase will be, you know, finding the money to complete the film in terms of post-production to the level that we want.
Well, I wish you very good luck, and that's fairtradefilms.com.au.
That's right.
If you want to contribute and or follow the progress of the film. Thanks very much, Luigi.
3CR Community Radio.
You're terrible.
Miranda!
Joining me now on Jump Cut is Veronica Pardo. She's the Executive Director of Arts Access. Arts Access is one of the organisations that has been campaigning very, very hard to improve the accessibility of cinemas. Veronica, thanks for joining us on 3CR.
Terrific. I'm pleased to be here, Lise.
What is accessible cinema?
Well, basically, accessible cinema is a program that's currently being run out by the four major cinema corporations. So we're talking about Hoyts, Village, Greater Union and Reading Cinemas to enable people who are deaf or hard of hearing and blind and vision impaired to be able to attend their local cinema and watch cinemas with movies with captions and also with audio description, so that people who are blind and vision impaired are able to understand some of what's happening on those screens.
How many cinemas would be currently deemed as being accessible?
Well, currently there's very small numbers, so we're talking about in the range of 40. But over the life of this program, which is intended to run until 2014, there will be more than 240 cinema screens which will have access to this particular technology. And I believe that will place Australian cinemas ahead of any other country in terms of access for this particular group in our community.
So community groups representing the interests of people with disability have been strongly advocating for improved cinema access for more than 10 years, I suppose. But can you give us some background to more recent developments?
Yes, absolutely. So you're quite right. There's been enormous advocacy around this issue. I think because cinema is simply one of Australia's favourite forms of entertainment. Everyone loves to be able to go to the cinema. And for these particular groups, they haven't been able to do so for many, many years. And so they've been lobbying the cinema industry very heavily over many years for exactly this type of reason. And what happened, probably about 12 months ago, was that the cinemas put in an exemption application to the Australian Human Rights Commission, which would, if it was accepted, would exempt them from the Disability Discrimination Act. And the Disability Discrimination Act is the only piece of legislation that we have at a federal level that prohibits discrimination against people with a disability in terms of the delivery of goods and services. So they wanted to, they proposed that they would provide for an increase in the number of captioned and audio described sessions in order to have this exemption. Now, the number that was proposed by the cinema industries was quite small, and I think that the community, rightly so, felt very aggrieved. And I believe that was the catalyst for a very significant campaign that was run by the community of people who are deaf and blind to say to the industry and to say to government that enough was enough, and really that their expectation was much greater than what was being offered. And that conversation turned into the Accessible Cinema Implementation Plan, which I've already spoken about a little bit, but it will mean that we will have a program of accessible cinema rolled out across the country in the cinemas that are owned by those major corporations.
So that's quite an achievement on behalf of advocates, really, isn't it?
I think it's one of the largest advocacy campaigns that was run by the disability sector, and I think it just goes to show what what, you know, what social change can occur when the community comes together on issues that are really important to them.
Has technology caught up a little bit with the advocates as well? Has that been a stumbling block?
Look, it has been a stumbling block, and I don't know that if I'd say that technology has caught up, but I think that we're seeing some very rapid change in this area, and it's something that we really need to be mindful of and I guess encouraging us, because some of the technology that's currently being used is the first of its kind. So, you know, in some ways I equate it a little bit with mobile technology. When we first saw the first mobile phones, they were very rudimentary in terms of the style and the delivery of that technology. But over time, that progressed to really meet a level of consumer aspiration. And I'm very hopeful that the technology that's being used to deliver cinema access will do so as well. So we're very much seeing prototypes on the market at the moment. But as the community starts to utilise this technology, and most importantly, give feedback about how they found the experience, we're hoping that those companies, those manufacturers of this technology, will really take that on board, and we'll see some rapid change, I think, and improvements in the way that those technologies deliver an experience in something that really the rest of us take for granted.
Because it's a great collective experience, isn't it, going to the cinema?
Look, it is. It absolutely is. And that's one of the issues that I think is frequently told to us. We are the producers of the Other Film Festival. So the Other Film Festival is Australia's only fully accessible film festival, and it focuses on exploring the lives of people with a disability through screen culture. And one of the things that people tell us all the time is that it's not just about getting in the door, it's about the experience that you have when you're in there. So being able to sit with your friends, being able to be immersed in the content that you're watching, and not feeling that all eyes are on you as you make your way through these whatever special provisions might have been made in order to accommodate your particular needs. It's really about being just one of the community and experiencing the same sorts of things that we all want to. It is somewhat of an invisible kind of experience when you go to the movies. You don't really want to stand out. You like to sit in the dark and eat your popcorn and have a chat with the person next to you.
Get all covered with chocolate like everybody else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I imagine there are some significant costs involved, as this involves a certain level of technology. Who's covering the costs?
Well, the cinemas have really come to the party in this regard. So they are making an unprecedented investment in rolling out this new technology. So something like $2 million over the next 4 years. And look, government has helped. So there's been some incentive programs put in place by government to make sure that the cinemas do meet their targets. But yes, it is a significant investment, and one that we would say is warranted, because as you mentioned when we first started this interview, it's been many years of lobbying on the part of the disability sector, and I think people with a disability would rightly expect to see an investment of this nature at this point in time.
You're on 3CR, this is the Jump Cut program, and we're speaking with Veronica Pardo. She's the Executive Director of Arts Access. We're talking about accessible cinema. The goal of the Accessible Cinema campaign is to have at least one accessible screen in every one of the 132 cinema complexes run by some of the major commercial chains. Now, that's still a reasonably small number of screens, given that there are nearly 2,000 screens in Australia. How will it be determined what plays on this particular screen?
Well, these are conversations that we're having all the time. Of course, we're very fortunate, I think, to be able to sit around the table with those cinema companies now and really thrash out these issues, because, of course, that's what people want. They want choice, and they want to be able to go to their nearest cinema. They want to be able to choose the movie that they want to see, and they want to have a range of sessions available to them. Now, the new technology, the closed caption technology and audio description technology that's being introduced, will enable some of that choice. Perhaps not as much as we would like, and certainly that's something that we need to keep monitoring over time, because at the moment, the sorts of numbers that we're talking about is, you know, in a smaller complex, one cinema, one screen. And so at the moment, there are five units available for patrons to come and use in that one screen. And that one screen may be showing the same movie, for example, throughout a week. And so choice, again, is fairly limited. But I think we're very hopeful, and I think that the cinemas have certainly opened the doors to those conversations. So we're very keen to talk about, you know, how we can maximise choice. But I think the most important thing for us is we really want consumers to go out and test it and try it and give us that feedback. Because if we know what their experiences have been, good and bad, then we can certainly communicate those experiences to the cinema chains. And I'm really confident that we can start to tweak some of those issues.
Because it is an ongoing process, isn't it? The agreements are still being formed, so there is still some room to move.
Oh, there's enormous scope, I think, enormous scope for improvement. And I think that the conversations are very productive. So what we do need is that information. And in some instances, we may not be able to make those. We can certainly make those recommendations, and we are making those recommendations. They may not be able to be actioned now, but I think that it's really important that we're very clear in terms of what is it that people are after, and if they're experiencing something that, you know, is negative, we want to hear about those things as well, because, you know, we're very keen to make sure that this program, as much as it's able to, can meet the aspirations of people out there in the community.
Veronica, have the independent cinemas been part of this discussion at all?
Well, not this particular discussion. I'm sure that there are, and I understand that there are other conversations happening with the independent sector. They have their own cinema access program that they've now been running for a number of years now with the support of the federal government.
Right.
But this is this conversation around the new technology and a closed caption model is something that is very, very recent. And I know that there are moves afoot to discuss with the independent sector how these sorts of things might impact on them. But I don't really have a lot to update you with in regards to that particular question.
Thanks a lot. Now, Veronica, if people are looking for more information about accessible cinema or indeed want to know where the nearest accessible screen is, what should they do?
The information, as I understand it, is presently available in the newspapers. So one of the things that we're talking with the cinemas at the moment is about how the information is getting out to consumers. And obviously our interest is in seeing that information on websites. Now currently, we understand that cinemas are advertising their closed captioned and audio described sessions in the newspaper. So in the first instance, I would direct consumers there. But again, we're really keen to hear from consumers how, you know, what did they think about that and did that work for them? Because, you know, clearly many people are getting their information from the cinema websites now. And so we're keen to have a think about how that's being delivered. The accessible cinema implementation rollout has its own website and an email address. And it's accessible.cinema@faxia.gov.au. And all the information you could possibly want about accessible cinema is available there. But if people want to talk more about the issue and have further questions, I really do direct them to Arts Access Victoria or their peak disability organisations such as Blind Citizens Australia or Deafness Forum of Australia.
Thanks, Veronica. So if this is something that's dear to your heart, do get involved because there is still work to be done. Veronica Pardo, Executive Director of Arts Access, thanks very much for joining us today.
A pleasure, Elise.
Are you fighting?
Yeah, we all make mistakes.
We can't leave the piano!
What's on this week at the Nova? The 3D Battle of the German Auteurs. Pina by Wim Wenders, a 3D film about the dancer Pina Bausch, versus Cave of Forgotten Dreams by Werner Herzog, about the Chevet caves with the cave paintings, thousands of years old. You can either see both, but you can enjoy this new direction of the 3D revival. Also at the Nova is Tabloid, Errol Morris's film about the former Miss Wyoming who abducts a Mormon missionary. It's kind of only an America story, and only Errol Morris can really tease out these characters and give them the space to be their nutty selves. At the Kino on the 14th of October is Into Eternity, a film about what basically when your radioactive waste lasts hundreds of thousands of years and you've never made anything that lasts a thousand years, where are you going to put it? That's a documentary. At the Astor, The Lion King's tenure is finally over and they've returned to being a repertory cinema. So you've got a Sergio Leone double coming up, a George A. Romero triple, and a John Waters retrospective. That's what's on. And that's it for Jump Cut for this week. Thank you for listening.